So, welcome to the show. This is going out on Mintwave Radio. So you can ask Alexa or you can go to KarenRobertsCoaching.com/Mintwave-radio, listening live or see the schedule for any of the other shows. With regards to the podcast, again, my website, /podcast-network. You can download the app for Apple and Android, and please subscribe and follow any of the podcasts that take your fancy. Now, today's episode of A Coffee with Karen is episode 115, and today we have Beverly, who is a divorce coach, and we're going to be talking about how women can thrive after divorce. Now, I'm your host, Karen Roberts, and we provide a platform for coaches or therapists, healers, to get their message heard to the people that need to hear it. Now, as owners of Mintwave Radio and the Raising Vibrations podcast network on Podbean, we also have a directory, so come and find the right fit for you. What do you need right now? So today, thank you so much, Beverly, for being here today. Now, we know that you're a divorce coach, a podcast host, and a woman on a mission, that you want women in divorce to feel confident, strong, intelligent, and beautiful so they can live the fabulous lives they were meant to. And as a divorce coach, Beverly provides knowledge, support, and insight to help women going through the emotional challenges of divorce. So welcome to the show, Beverly.
Hi, Karen. Thank you so much for having me. It's a great honor to be here.
Awesome. And can you share with, so we've just read a little bit about of what you do, but if you'd like to share with the audience, maybe share a little bit of your story. How did you come to be doing what you're doing right now?
Absolutely. Well, I grew up in a home that gave me everything materially that I could want, but didn't know how to foster self-worth and self-esteem. So I grew up thinking I needed to achieve to get attention that would give me the feelings of self-esteem and self-worth. But in reality, no amount of attention was going to fill that hole because it wasn't taught to me early. And that's no criticism of my parents because they weren't taught that either. So it was passed down from generation to generation. And one of the things I want to do is break that chain. So what's happening when you have this need for attention is that you gravitate to the people you think will give it to you. So I had a life of failed marriages, toxic relationships, toxic professional relationships, and multiple divorces and domestic violence of a number of forms. And it wasn't until I really started digging into who I was, gaining a lot of self-awareness, that I realized that one of the reasons I had been married and divorced so many times was that I was seeking something from them to make me feel better, when in fact, nobody can make you feel better but yourself. It was as if I had a hole in my soul that only a spiritual solution could fill. And so after going through that process and recovering, I wanted to give it back to other women, and I want other women to go through divorce with more understanding, less pain, more support than I had myself.
So it's a natural progression, which we hear so often, that it is through our own healing journeys that for many people, it is the natural next step. Because if you've overcome certain challenges, whatever those challenges are, you know, it's natural because now you have the tools, you have the knowledge, and you want to get out there and share it with the world so that they don't suffer as you did. Is that the case with you?
Absolutely. And I also think I had a tremendous amount of professional success. Again, kind of the workaholic trying to achieve to be good enough. And I think that through that, I learned that people thought I was together on the outside and confident and successful, but on the inside, I was still dying. I was still, you know, feeling less than, feeling small. And what I've learned is that 79% of all women don't feel confident, and one out of two don't feel beautiful. And if you add to that, on top of that, the process of divorce and how it destroys your self-esteem and self-worth and reduces your self-care and changes your life, if you don't get help in dealing with that, particularly emotionally, you're destined to repeat the same mistakes over and over or live a life of resentment and misery.
And that, I mean, those stats that you just said, I just want to go back over because I think it took me a while to to actually process that, because
yes,
they are incredibly alarming. 79%, did you say?
79% of women don't consider themselves beautiful. Don't consider themselves confident. Out of two women, or 50% of women, don't consider themselves beautiful. Out of every five women consider themselves less than other women. And 65% of women don't consider themselves intelligent. That is an absolute tragedy. And that's why I wanted to do something.
Wow. So it all starts from within and how we feel about ourselves, as opposed to the persona that we may be portraying to the world. So,
absolutely.
I mean, that's just that's quite scary statistics. And where do you think this is coming from? Like you just said earlier, this isn't to blame parents and how we, you know, they bring up their kids, and as you said, we do tend to repeat certain things, or certain things we say to our children. You know, I can remember when my children were younger thinking, where did that come from? That's something my mum would have said to me, because we do things on autopilot. So there's we're not talking about malicious intent here. Obviously, some people do go through that, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the parents that are trying to help their children and trying to bring them up but you know, we don't know what we don't know.
Right.
So where do you think so many of these feelings of unworthiness that women are feeling, where is it coming from? Where is it starting?
Well, I think it goes back generations. And I think it starts with things like women, when we're little, boys were taught they could do anything and go out and run and jump and play. And we were told to sit back and, you know, play with dolls or sew. We were taught as children to be seen and not heard. We were taught not to speak up and be assertive. I remember that when my daughter was in kindergarten and I raised both my daughters to be independent and assertive, the teacher came to me and said, she is going to survive great in the business world, but her behavior and her assertiveness does not fit at all in elementary school. So it shows you right there that we have to suppress who we are at a very young age. And then you add on top of it things like the ads about, you know, the models and how skinny they are and what is beautiful. And I think one of the most dangerous things we do is we compare. Because when I compare, I'm always comparing my insides to your outsides. And I'm always going to come up short because you're going to look good to me and I'm going to feel bad on the inside. So women tend to compare. We compete, we compare. And when I grew up professionally, women didn't help women. They were nasty to women and sabotaged other women rather than supporting women.
Do you think things are changing now, or do you think things are still in that, which is, you know, it's a, I suppose, you know, they were the, maybe the pioneers, if you like, you know, they had to make it in the male dominated arena. So, you know, they were more using their more masculine energy, if you like, and maybe felt again, I'm sure, you know, or I would hope that they weren't doing it again with the intent. It was probably unconscious, because they may have felt that they've got to fight to stay there. And they were coming at things from a very competitive mindset because of this male dominated arena. So maybe that had to happen to sort of open the doorway for women to go through. But now, do you see a change in the way and way things are?
Well, I think I see the change among entrepreneurs. I see that entrepreneurs aren't necessarily competitive with each other, and they do help each other. I don't see the change in the corporate world. And part of that is, I think, because as you go up the ladder, there are fewer and fewer jobs for women. So, in fact, they are competing for a job. And I think so I see it happening a little more. What the other phenomena I see is so many women talking about women should help other women, when in fact, when I look at it, I do not see that. I don't see, for example, women buying services and products from other women. I don't see women voting for other women. I don't see women seeking out women medical doctors and other professionals to the extent you would hope that it would. So I think some things are. I think also there's some setbacks for us. I don't want to get political, but the Equal Rights Amendment, things like that. And I heard Congress was putting through a bill to outlaw birth control. So there's forces around us that want to keep us down because we threaten them.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And that is a fright. That is a, well, that's a whole other issue, isn't it? I mean, that's just a frightening thing that we are slowly losing our rights. But I mean, I can totally hear. I mean, I've never been involved in corporate. I've always sort of worked for myself, but I do have I can understand the corporate setting again, because it's all fear-based. You know, if they've got a job, everyone wants to feel safe in a job. And if they want to go up the ladder, they're fearful. And that's how I see the whole corporate arena, is that they're trying to keep people back because they want to be. And so that's really, I mean, what an, you know, I used to feel sorry for people in that arena. I used to teach fitness in a sort of a city in the city of London, in the gym in the mornings, and I'd hear them in the changing rooms talk, and it just all seemed like such a backstabbing workplace to be involved in this. I used to think to myself, how do you get by day to day living in that environment? Whereas, like you said, entrepreneurs, and especially maybe the MLM sort of culture and all these things, is about pulling people up with you. That's how you grow. But it's interesting that you say that you're still not seeing it. So do you think that's because of conditioning? Again, they may sort of on the surface want to be supporting women, but do you think that's sort of, again, conditioning, that we've sort of been brought up to put our trust in certain people that will tend to be male? Do you see that going on, or do you see something else going on?
I think a lot of it is that we were taught that men were the authority and men were better than women. And then I think there's also a part of the population where the women follow the men's ideas and do, for example, vote like their husband does without necessarily thinking through, or buy or use the doctor or go to the lawyer or, you know, whatever. So I think that there are situations where it's been ingrained. And on top of it, many of those women don't see the need for change. It's one thing if you see it. It's another thing if you don't even see it.
So it's hidden. And of course, then with women, oh, maybe we shouldn't go down this route, but, you know, it's almost like, even women in sport, you can't even compete against women anymore. We're losing everything. But let's get back to the subject matter. We could go off on a tangent here. Specifically, I mean, obviously, divorce is, I'm sure, you know, this is speaking of from somebody who's never been married myself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we see it all around us. It is something that I'm sure you've got stats there of how it is on the increase. And it's mm-hmm. seen, I suppose, still as such a negative, but it doesn't always have to be, does it? So how can women thrive after divorce?
Well, I think it depends upon how they came through the divorce, what they dealt with during the divorce. Were they empowered or not? Did they deal with their emotions? How contentious or volatile the divorce was? So I think there are so many factors. And what I found is that the women that come for coaching, when they are just thinking about getting a divorce and they haven't even talked to their spouse, they can get advice on things like, should they even get a divorce? Do they really want that? They can get information on what I need to do, what information I need to get from the house. What does the process look like? But more importantly, their worth and value as women, even though this marriage ended. Some women, because they've spent their life being a wife, that when they divorce, they don't know who they are because the only role they've ever known is wife. So many of them become lost without help from an emotional identity kind of standpoint. Other women don't have a voice because they feel small and insecure. And so in the process, they don't speak up for themselves and ask for what they want. So they may receive less of a settlement than they deserve, or would be equitable. So, and then there are women that have gotten divorced for a number of years and never dealt with their emotions. So their emotions are ruling them, whether it's sadness, whether it's resentment, whether it's anger. You know, for example, I knew a woman who was divorced for 8 years from her spouse. And at 8 years, she turned to her spouse and said, "You haven't suffered enough." That's the kind of holding on and the bitterness that makes a life full of misery, that if they had done the work, or even if they did the work now, they could have a life that was so much more worthwhile.
I get it. You know, you get married, you think that it's going to last forever. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's not always through fault of either party. You know, sometimes this is just, you know, we grow as people and sometimes we can just naturally grow apart. And it doesn't have to be the bitter, hard, just angry transition that sometimes mm-hmm. you hear about people going through. I mean, I hear about people going through all sorts. And you think, just what a shame, two people that loved each other once and have got to this stage of bickering and fighting. And it's not, you know, nobody wins, do they? Other than maybe the lawyer.
And then a lot of times this this feeling of I want out has been building for so many years that the woman just gives up and says, I want out. And women actually initiate 80% of the divorces. And yeah. Oh. So there are a lot of women that say, I'm not going to take this anymore. And there are more and more older women doing that who aren't afraid. The divorce rate in the United States is decreasing slightly, but the divorce rate for couples over 50 years old is doubling. So you're seeing this shift to the older women saying, I'm not going to live the rest of my life like this.
Now that again, Cor, you're throwing out there some quite scary statistics, really. So yeah. what do you think is the change then? So the younger generation seem to be staying in. Now, what do you put towards that? Do you think people are waiting longer, so maybe they're in more stable relationships before they're getting married, or is there something else going on? Versus, you know, I can understand. The older, I think, because of society, the way society has gone, we have access to more support structures and more knowledge. So maybe that's empowering them more to, okay, yeah, like you say, you know, life's, you know, I don't want to waste the rest of my life. But how do you see, so for even through your work as a coach, how have you seen the sort of transitional changes, and what do you think is causing these?
Well, I think a lot of millennials and younger generations are saying, I'm delaying marriage, or I'm not going to get married at all. Why do I need to get married? I don't want to go through what my parents did in divorce. They might tend to get their nourishment, if you will, from groups of friends. They may not feel the need to have this, you know, monogamous marital relationship. So that's causing the marriage rate to go down, which causes the divorce rate to go down. And then you have the older generation that more and more are divorcing. Some of it's mutual and amicable. Some of it's not. You know, some of the leading causes of divorce are they just grew apart. Some of it is they didn't get enough attention and support. Some of it's infidelity. Some of it's financial. So some of it's domestic violence. So there is, you know, a pattern too of domestic violence in the older generation as well that has been kept secret for a long time.
Ah. Yes, I can imagine. I suppose these days there is more awareness being brought to that. Yeah. I don't know how you found the timing of, you know, the lockdown. I know we heard of a huge rise in abuse at home because everybody's at home instead of everybody being at work. So have you seen a shift with things going on from lockdown?
No, I think the situation with domestic violence, first of all, is critical. One out of every three women has experienced some form of abuse, whether it's physical, verbal, mental, emotional, financial, many other types, but many women don't consider anything other than he hit me as abuse. So, but many of the experts in domestic violence say one out of three, and some of them even say one out of two. I know I went through a marriage with physical and emotional abuse, and I went through a marriage of mental, emotional abuse. So, and I'm not afraid to say that. And I think for generations, we were afraid to say that in many cases, because if you were still together, that would mean you would be hurt for telling.
Yes, of course. Yes, of course. So yeah, it's a so do you think that the what's happening now is there is now a space for people, for women to, you know, admit what's going on? I suppose there's so much, again, we put, you know, as women, we put so much pressure on ourselves, mm-hmm. don't we? Oh, we've got to have the perfect home, the perfect relationship. So sometimes maybe to admit that things might not quite be as they seem behind closed yep. doors. Do you think that's what stopped people in the past from opening up and admitting that?
Yeah. And also, I think many women in those situations have been, I'd call it brainwashed, to think they have no worth or no value. So they don't see any hope of a life outside of that. And so they won't leave. What I will say is for any woman who's divorcing or not, who is in that situation and thinking of leaving, do not leave until you have a safety plan. Because there's a tremendous amount of women harmed and killed when they try and leave. So you need to speak to someone who can teach you how to do that. There's a national hotline that I can send to you that you can give out afterwards in the show notes or whatever. But have a safety plan.
And I've heard this before from they're a charity, I think, based in California, Expose, and she's doing a documentary about, you know, women. And I remember her speaking about, yes, it's so important to have an exit strategy because so many more. Actually, I can remember, I seem to remember when she explained the stats that actually I was quite horrified to hear the stats in the UK, because we always think things are worse in the States, right? Because they have guns and that. I mean, we have knife crime and I don't know what's worse. But so in our heads, or maybe it's just me, my perception would always be it's going to be far more dangerous in America than it is in the UK. And I think the stats were the other way around. I was really quite, because you don't necessarily hear about it. So, yes, I suppose for people, if they are in a specific, maybe more specifically, a physically abusive relationship, it's not going to be as simple as just saying, I'm leaving.
Yeah, it's the very beginning moment I start talking to a woman about divorce and divorce coaching, the first question I ask her is, are you in a situation of any kind of domestic violence, or are you afraid for your safety? Because that issue has to be dealt with first. We move on to help her through the process to understand, to learn new skills, to learn self-worth, and to move through the process.
Right. And I suppose if it must be very difficult if they're, you know, on their own, don't have family that are close by or some kind of other support structure. So, for them to actually just... they're not working, they don't have any independence, they might be thinking, well, how will I survive on my own? Which is, I think that's probably what sort of frightened me into
never. Yeah, well, I think also a pattern of abusers is to isolate that wife, to keep her away from her friends and family so that he can kind of manipulate and control. So that's another phenomena that goes on. But to change the subject, because it's been, you know, kind of rough there. You had asked a question earlier about, is divorce always bad? And it is not. You know, for many people, divorce and a new different life is better than living in a marriage where you've been miserable, where you're not respected, where you're not loved, there's no affection, things like that. So, and sometimes, people stay married for children. And the question is, what does that teach children? How are you acting during that time? So in some cases, it is better. You know, obviously with domestic violence, it's better. But there are other situations that are much more subtle that it is a better alternative.
Yes, and it doesn't have to be. I suppose, again, I can only go by my background. My parents, you know, I never heard them row. We were brought up in a happy home. And so, you know, they had just grown apart and it was always very amicable. Mm-hmm. My father would come for Christmas Day and we'd all celebrate together. And then he'd leave in the afternoon. If ever we went out for meals as a family, because we're all sort of scattered, we'd all meet up. And, you know, my mum would be there with her boyfriend and my dad would come too. And I suppose I had that advantage of mm-hmm. seeing how it can be.
Yeah.
And so I used to look at people and think, why are you fighting over, like, it doesn't have to be that way. It can all be friendly. It can all be amicable. There's mm-hmm. no need. Why? I mean, the way I always see it, I think, well, there must be one side that's bitter, you know, something, or maybe if there was infidelity more, it's causing more of a bitterness. What creates this? I just don't understand how people can go from being in love to this hate fighting over little trinkets that they want ownership.
There's so many reasons, and a lot of them are fear-based. You know, it's, you know, fear if I can survive. Fear, will I ever find another man? Fear that I wonder what's going to happen to my kids. Fear that I'll be lonely. And then there are other fears or other things that truly are things like, I got so little money, I can't survive. I'm too old to get another job. So there's a variety of things that go into that. Some of them rational and factual, and some of them irrational.
Mm. But I know, as we know, even either way, there is always going to be a solution if you mm-hmm. work on yourself first.
Yes.
So you, as a divorce coach, so can you run through how you help women sort of mm-hmm. take them from this maybe uncertainty, maybe not even totally sure that they want a divorce? Mm-hmm. How do you move them to a place of either staying and being happy in the marriage, or making a sensible and hopefully amicable process so that they can move on and, as you say, thrive?
Right. Well, the first thing is, I don't tell them what to do. I am kind of their thinking partner that helps them think through what they want to do. And so let's say a woman has come to me, as many have, and are thinking about divorce. That is the absolute best time to come to me. I do not want people to be divorced. I want them to stay happily married, but I don't want them to stay in a marriage if they're terribly unhappy. So what we look at are things like what's good in the marriage and what's not. We look at what's valuable to her and the husband and what's not. We look at her part in the marriage. We look at her, we take an inventory of her emotions and we say, here's all the emotions I'm feeling now and their intensity. And then we measure that over time and compare it to what she says her ideal life is. And we look at what her life's like now and what her ideal life is like. And so those are kind of the emotional pieces. And I also guide her through more the legal pieces. I show her and educate her as to the process of divorce, what happens, what to be on the lookout for. And then we look at what skills she may need to deal with it, like communication skills, negotiation skills, maybe needs more feeling of how to use her voice, more confidence. And then as we move through the actual divorce itself and on to life afterwards, we start to dive deeper into what's underneath what she's feeling. You know, are there unresolved emotions and fears? Are there conditions from the actual divorce, let's say financial or child custody or whatever, that make her life difficult? And we go through that entire process from beginning to end, where I'm more the guide and the facilitator and an educator, and she comes to the decision. Because she's going to have to want it to be able to do the work. And she's going to have to get to the point where she accepts that the marriage is over, and she accepts that the only person she can change is herself.
And why we ever thought we could do anything different at any other time. Isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's only us. But actually people sort of say it sometimes as though it's a negative. I find it's empowering. That means I can change. If it was down to them changing, then I've got no chance.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you know, it's great. If it is down to me, and it's always down to me, it's always me in my own way at any time. Once you get out of your own way, and then there is a negative connotation to divorce, and there doesn't need to be, does there? It doesn't have to be this, you know, people, we change, we grow, we have different goals, and we might start out with the similar goals, but as we've grown and experienced new things, we might be on just different journeys. So it doesn't have to be the negative thing that, And do you think that's part of the problem, is because this sort of still a stigma, which is hard to believe that there still is a stigma on it, really. Come on, man. It's 2023. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Right.
There is no need for this. So for you, it must be quite rewarding to see the transformation of women go through and coming out on the other end when they actually really sort of understand themselves.
It's like their eyes light up and their face gets brighter, and they have an energy and a lightness that they didn't have before.
So it's been it can be sucked out of a person, can't it, over time? I suppose it would depends how long they've been in where it's not fun. I mean, you know, hopefully everybody's had a you know, enjoyed at one point, at some point at least, being married, but you know, it's not always meant to be, is it? So with you, so how do you work then with people? So I know you've said before that ideally it would be better to speak to you before, you know, just to make, you know, before you even say anything or do anything, because sometimes maybe just talking to you or even verbalizing it themselves, they might actually make the decision that actually, if we talk more and have more communication, we could actually save it. So is that your sort of where you're looking at going?
Yes. And there's actually cycles, because you can talk through that with a woman, and she can come to that conclusion that she wants to go back, and then they try, and then she goes, nope, not going to work. And she comes back and then rethinks it and reprocesses it. But it's kind of a natural evolution of marriage to want to question it. So I don't think there's anything wrong with questioning whether you should be together or not. But I think that the downside is, if I rush through it, if I don't learn, if I don't look at myself, then I'm doomed to repeat the same mistakes over and over again and be attracted to the same men that I am over and over again.
Ah, yeah. So then if they, so what you're, what I'm hearing from you is if they were to just go through it on the cuff, off the cuff, they might get divorced, but then they're going to go and get, jump into another relationship and they're going to find themselves in the same situation. So what you're saying is by coming in and talking it through, whatever decision they come to, even if they go back, just to almost check.
Yeah.
Is there any way of saving it?
Yeah. And I think that there's also an important distinction, you know, because people say, well, what's the difference between therapy and a coach? Well, the way I look at it is the therapist looks backward in time or deals with trauma, domestic violence, PTSD, childhood trauma. A coach looks at the present and forward and sets goals with the client to move forward. So it's a different focus, a different need, but both are very valuable.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense because it could totally change things in the relationship they're in now, or it's going to help them in their next one. So actually what you're offering is more of a service because it's not just about that one thing. It's more about what's going to happen out the other end when they get the exactly. out the other end. So, are there many? Do you think there's many people out there offering this kind of service? I haven't seen it around.
There are a number of divorce coaches. I haven't seen other divorce and empowerment coaches.
Okay. So some are just dealing with the matters to get them through it. And yes. you're more focused about, okay, that's part of the process. What about afterwards? Now, how are you going to move on and step into your power?
How you can step into your power during it and then even more so after.
Right. To make it more of an easy flow, I would have thought.
Yeah.
So it's less painful. I mean, who doesn't want that? Nobody. And maybe that is why. I mean, I suppose we are conditioned to run away from pain. So again, if this programming is that, you know, divorce is going to be this awful experience, some people might be staying because of that, because of the fear of actually going through that, when actually, man, that could free you up to free both parts. You know, it's not just the women, isn't it? I think if you're unhappy, free that person so that they can find happiness with the right person and you be freed up to fight. You know, it's just too much negative for me, I suppose. Look, I mean, I'm not the expert because, like I say, I've never been married.
And the other thing is there's a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding about the process itself. There are a number of ways to deal with divorce without an expensive court battle. There are even people called mediators that you can go to and work out your solutions amicably that are less expensive than attorneys. But there are also hostile and contentious situations where an attorney is needed. There are people that can help you dive into your finances really deep and tell you how much you'll need to live on and how much you should ask for in the divorce. So there's so much more information available if they could just reach out and grab it.
Right. But they got to ask. And I suppose that again, it's all, like you said earlier, it's all coming from a fear.
Yes.
Base. And it is
I just don't know what's out there. Yeah.
Yeah, because none of us know what we don't know. Like I say, I wouldn't have any clue because I've not experienced it. So, you know, and this is why I think everybody needs a coach. You know, there are always going to be things in our lives that we're not going to have, you know, not going to have knowledge knowledge on. So it would make sense to go with somebody that's going to guide you through the process and make it as easy and painless as possible, as with anything, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So for anybody listening that maybe, you know, might just even want to talk it through, for you, how would they come and find you?
My website is herselfexpression.com, and you can go on there and schedule a free call with me just to talk through your situation to see if coaching can help you. Also, you can go in there to see my podcast and my blog and the communities that I've built for divorced women to get support. So it's herselfexpression.com.
Fantastic. So with regards to, you know, setting this up, I mean, how do you work? Is it a specific amount of time? Is it just individual? Is it bespoke? How is it that you work with clients?
Well, I develop custom programs for each woman because each woman's situation is different. And my approach is all one-on-one. I don't do group coaching because I think it needs to be tailored to her. And I have different ways that I can approach it. For someone that's just considering divorce, it looks one way. And for someone that's going through the whole process, it's more of a longer term thing, generally at least 3 months, because I'm also looking at their behavior changing needs to stick for the long term rather than temporarily.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's going to take time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure I don't know what the situation is there versus here. I have no clue.
Right.
I'm sure things are very different. But however, having said that, it doesn't matter where in the world you are, does it?
No. As long as you're English speaking, I can help you.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because regardless of the different laws that are in, it's not really about that, is it? It's more about the whole process and how they feel,
mm-hmm.
How the woman feels going through it, so that it doesn't have to be, a struggle day to day. So what has been, do you have any, obviously without naming names, what has been the best transformation that you've seen, that what women can, some women can achieve coming out of what some people would see as a negative, but actually, you know, even both parties end up totally thriving.
Right. Well, I saw one woman who her husband and she spent years and years sitting on he was in a reclining chair and she was on a sofa, and they never spoke. They never had intimacy. They had different rooms. So there was really no relationship. They were almost like two roommates passing in the night. But the difference was she kept shrinking. She kept getting smaller and smaller and losing herself. And so one of the things that she did was she looked at, was her life going to be better or worse if she left? And then the next step was what we needed to do to help her grow and look at her emotions, get self-awareness, and do the work. And she came through it thriving. She built a whole new group of friends. She does volunteer work. She dresses to make her feel good, have energy. And she has a positive outlook on life. So going from shrinking and essentially no support and no life to this new ray of sunshine.
Wonderful. And that's possible for all. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's amazing.
If they do the work.
And is that, are you talking about doing the inner work?
Yes. And really going deep, not being afraid to look at your stuff.
And that's, again, that's the thing. I suppose, again, People want to avoid pain. We're built like that to avoid pain. So to be willing to do the work, which is necessary to come through out the other end. And do you see that many people are just sort of maybe not consciously, again, I'm not saying that, you know, because everybody wants to heal, but it's a subconscious thing to come, oh, I don't really want to go there.
Think about the people in therapy or marriage counseling who go in and go, ain't going to do this. And I mean, it can be the same thing that they're scared of it. They don't see the benefit of it. And a lot of times they've put such walls up between them and their feelings that they don't see how they need to go deeper. And then there are some people where, let's say the woman is a talented working woman, earns great money, had an affair, and she is relieved when the divorce happens. She's happy to be out of it and whatever. What can happen there is because she feels better temporarily, she doesn't see the need to do the work. And then she will down the road, all of a sudden these feelings will come up and she doesn't know why.
So it is always going to be an unconscious response because I suppose, no, you're not going to get out of it. So maybe it's really accepting that I'm going to need help through this emotionally, because no matter what, you know, I went into the marriage hoping it's going to last. It's not. It hasn't worked out, which is okay. But there's going to be some form of grieving type process.
Exactly.
To go through. And if you think you're going to get away with it, then you're kidding yourself. Is that what I'm getting?
And it's much the same as grief like death. But the difference is your ex is still alive. And you may have to deal with him. Let's say if you have child custody issues, you may have to deal with him. Whereas when death, you don't.
So it's, so it depending on what your current circumstances, that's a good thing or a bad thing. Yes. Hopefully it doesn't have to be. Again, maybe you need to partner up and have somebody helping the guy as well. So that, you know, it makes it just a whole, you know, it doesn't have to be this awful process, because it's,
a lot of men go through similar things, but I just find that because of my experience, because I'm a woman, that I am better able to help women.
Oh yeah, you're going to help women. I'm just saying that the man might need to be recommended to go get help too.
Yeah.
So that it's a win-win. It's a win-win. Stop the fighting, people. There's no need for it. Everything has a solution. Everything has a solution. Awesome. So, well, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an interesting conversation. But again, we went all the way around, but we ended up there. We naturally avoid having these conversations because it's not happening, and actually we need to be having these conversations so that people out there do realize that they're not alone, and that there is help, and that there is support, and it doesn't have to be this story that they might be creating in their own minds of how horrendous it's going to be. Get help. Why do you think women just, it's almost, again, we're conditioned to not ask for help because that's a sign of weakness, or that means we failed in some way. But again, we need to get that message out there that no, that's not the case. There's nothing wrong in asking for help from the right people. Maybe not your best mate who doesn't like him anyway. That may be not the best way to do it.
Exactly. Yeah?
Get somebody that's not involved in any way. Get a and getting help to actually thrive through it. So, yeah, thank you for your time. And to the rest of the listeners, it's been a pleasure having you. And to everybody else, well, you know, if you're a coach yourself and you have a message that needs to be heard, and you're helping people in whatever community you're in, then please get in touch. Again, the website is up there. And for everybody else, then I will be back. Well, I will be back tomorrow with a Coffee with Karen. So bye for now.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.